Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and what a wonderful way it is to be able to end the week with a dynamic individual that we have as our guest today, Dr. Bernhoff Dahl. He likes being called Dr. Bernie. And we're going to be talking about his book, Optimize Your Life. And it has an interactive worksheet CD edition that goes with it as well. Dr. Bernie, welcome to the show.
Well, a joy to be here.
I am so delighted to have you because with this program, we're always interested in empowering people and giving them something that is going to enable them to make their life better in one way or another. Now, you're a physician.
Yeah.
You're very much of the entrepreneurial nature. You speak all over the country and even internationally.
Right.
You have been a consultant who has applied what you call the power of strategic planning.
Right.
And you did this as part of your medical practice and
right.
different business ventures.
Yep.
What was it that put you on track to saying this is something that can work not just for me but for everybody else?
Yeah, I think what happened to me in my life was that I'm chugging along, going to school, loving it. I got an undergraduate degree in chemistry and Bible from Wheaton College. Then I went to medical school at Cornell. Then I went to University of Vermont for 5 years. I was the Epidemic Intelligence Service officer for 2 years with the feds. And then, lo and behold, even though I had worked summers, I had to go find a job. And here I'm 33 years old. And I always thought it was a clerical mistake. But anyways, somebody chose me as the chief of pathology at the medical center in Maine. So I said, oh, my, this is something else. So I went in there and I gave my everything I could imagine in there. And learned a lot about dealing with other people, dealing with physicians, dealing with fellow physicians, dealing with medical technologists. As a pathologist, this was part of my expanding world, and it became huge. And what was more important, I learned about myself, because I was made the chief at the age of 33. I had not only opportunity, I had responsibility. And I dove into this, and what I learned in the next 25 years, I put in this book called Optimize Your Life.
You say the power of questions is part of the building block of your program, and you have 10 personal questions, 10 organizational questions. Why do you feel that it is important to ask these various questions? Many of them so many of us have asked, and more than once in our lifetime, who am I, what am I doing now, what do I value, et cetera,
right.
et cetera. And organizational questions, what is the organization, what is the organization doing now, and you have more questions that we can address.
Right.
But there's 10 in each category. Why 10?
Yeah, I tell you, what we did was I looked at how, you know, first of all, I'm a scientist. I've left brain linear logic type things. And I did not want this book, which I worked on actually as a series of articles for almost 20 years in business publications as well as medical publications. When we finally published it as a real book for the real world, and the book has done enormously well, it's been licensed in Japan, Korea, mainland China, where it's been an international bestseller there, and recently by the Japanese and then by the for a worldwide Spanish edition. The thing was, what we decided to do was to ask questions. So we first, I went out and I looked at 50, 60 different questions, then it boiled it down to the 10 most important. So it is really very Socratic. If you remember when you studied in high school or college, Socrates, he was actually an unattractive old man who walked around and asked embarrassing questions. And he wanted you to look inside yourself. He didn't necessarily have the answers, but he had good questions. And so the format I use here is a lot of left brain linear logic, asks a lot of questions, but it drives you to fill in the 41 different worksheets. They don't have to fill them all out. It gets a little daunting after a while. And what we did on the second edition was to include a CD so you could put it on your computer. You could have password protection, enter your data, and you can edit your data, you can print out your data. My own wife of many years, 25 plus years, will not fill out the book worksheets because it's private personal information. So the CD is a key part of it. Why those 10 questions that he ended up after we tried this out at the university, couple university and college settings, and then in the, quote, the marketplace as a consultant, we ended up with the 10 key questions. And then they're really pretty simple. Number one is, who are you? Number two, what do you value? What are you doing now? What do you have or want to have or do or be in the future? And it goes on and on. It's a very, very basic questions. And we try to help you answer them. We don't have the answers to your life. This book has gone worldwide, and is now, I just got an announcement this week that Jarir International is going to publish a worldwide Arabic version. So it's gone to all kinds of religions, all kinds of places, and it is very vanilla. These questions are vanilla questions. They're not designed to embarrass you. They're designed to ask you to take that journey into yourself and answer these questions for yourself when you're comfortable with answering those questions on those worksheets which we put in the book.
Now, you break down the strategic planning to three components. I call this the GPS system.
Okay.
You set the direction, allocate resources,
right,
and evaluate alternatives.
Right.
And that's why I said, this is a GPS system. That's what they put in all the cars, because you can't go from point A to point B when you're driving if you don't have a clue,
right,
one, about where you're going and what you want to do. So
right,
this is very, very significant. And you have this broken down into chapters. And again, you have got the wonderful DVD that goes with it so that, or CD, so that you can work with this on the computer and
right,
keep it private, where, just like with your wife, you don't have to have other people see it. And I think that's very important. Let's go into personal strategic planning. Now, I mentioned three basic points, but the personal planning is so important.
Right.
Why should we have integrity with that?
Well, I'm sorry, ask that question again.
Why is it so important we have integrity with our personal planning?
Personal. Well, you know, I've got to almost turn that question upside down in that, don't forget, I'm driven into the world of organizational strategic planning, and I developed a synergistic group, not a hierarchy group, flattened synergy, because flattened hierarchy, because my parents had come from Europe, my father had started several companies outside of New York City, ended up getting competitors that left him and went on their own. So I said, I'm going to learn from my father's way of doing it, did it differently. So we had synergy instead of hierarchy. So what happened there was we put together this organization using this organizational strategic planning, but it didn't take me long to realize that organizational and personal strategic planning are one and the same. And over the subsequent years, I found other people I'd taken courses with, like Charles Dwyer, who's at the Wharton School at the University in Pennsylvania, and who agreed with that. And I said, oh, my Lord, that's interesting. He's a professional in that world. Personal strategic planning is looking into yourself and ask these questions. But every one of those questions, Donna, can be adapted to the world of organization. It doesn't matter if it's your Boy Scout troop, your church group, or whether it's your business unit in your company. It doesn't really apply to huge organizations. It has to be cracked into some sort of manageable pieces. And it's therein that, but I still say that you need to start with your own personal strategic planning in order to put in as part of an organizational strategic planning, which is really the collection of a whole series of personal strategic plannings of the key people in the organization.
When you are doing this, it's important also, according to your book, to develop a personal values statement. We've all heard about, gee, have a mission statement. But yours is a personal value statement. Can you give us an example of one?
Well, I tell you what, I think that's an excellent question, because I start the book in order very different than other books on strategic planning. And sure, we're going to do mission statement. That basically addresses what you're doing now. But then we're going to vision statement, what you want to do in the future. But what I'm trying to, my message, I think maybe it's my degree in Bible and philosophy from college days, that I think the most important thing that drives the decisions you and I make or anyone makes are the values that we have. And we receive those values pretty much independent of who we are. We get it from our parents, we get it from our society, we get it from our religion, we get it from the local policeman who makes you behave, your teacher who makes you behave, and so forth. And so what you end up with is a set of values, and it's really fun if you have the courage to go in and ask yourself those questions that relate to your values, because it's really your values that we start with in this book. Well, we give you a little introduction, we sort of set you up a little bit, and get you ready for the questioning system. But then, what do we start with first? We start with your values. And because everything in your whole world is driven by yourself, and I have a graphic, and it says me and my values, whether it's my relationship with God, religion. Some people's religion is not God, it's money or something. What is your value relationship with your profession, society, friends, and families, and so forth? And everything you do is driven by your values. And so I spend quite a bit of time on that. And I have this little formula that I share with people. And it says, behavior is a function of values by time plus the environment. And if you, and I realize about myself, you say, well, I know my values. Well, do you really know your values? Sometimes you have to be put into an environmental situation. On that equation, B is a function of values plus environment. If you're put in a situation where the environment is different, that could be war, famine, pestilence, some setting, then we're going to find out what your real values are. Mm-hmm. Then you will decode it. And I think that's the I spend a lot of time on that, and of course I spend I retired 12 years ago, had a couple diseases I thought were going to kill me. As a pathologist, of course, I saw all the bad diseases. So I spent the last 12 years with Aristotle and Socrates and Plato and Thales and all that. In fact, I went to Delphi and talked to
Oracle?
Yeah, and so I had a good time. So I've enjoyed it and haven't died yet. So I'm doing pretty well.
Oh, so, my goodness. I'm so glad.
Yeah. And the book will be, you're going to have to struggle with me, with Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics, named after his son, Nico. And so we do. We address that. We address the Ten Commandments. We address all kinds of stuff. The book has had enormous endorsement by Stephen Covey. And we have some of the Stephen Covey material in there, which we think is great as far as the world of values. You probably know that he's a Mormon, and I think I have a lot of Mormon friends and actually roommates at the medical school are Mormon. So it's been a fun thing. Values really drives everything you do, every decision you make, everything you do is driven by your values. And I think if you get a hold of those and find out those, you say that it's kind of intriguing. And sometimes it's a little bit scary. You might find out there's certain things about yourself that you're not particularly happy with or proud about, but you can do something to modify it. And I've over the years, now at the risk of getting to the preacher phase of my thing, and I'm a little ecumenical, as you can imagine, a bit like St. John here, is that people do change in only three different ways. And I think that's number one is in environmental situation like war or pestilence or horrible tsunami or something. I think people's real values can surface and they can change into a better person or worse person. The second thing I think is that disease, like a chronic disease, can make people change their world view. I think the last one is a genuine religious experience, and that can be for good or for bad. So that's why. So I spent quite a bit of time on values in this book.
We go also in your book, and I'm skipping around a little bit here, working with a personal vision statement. What would you like to have to be in the future? And you've broken this particular chapter down with a lot of very direct information. And, you know, it's dealing with stating the problem, forming the hypothesis, observing the experiment, interpreting the data, drawing the conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
You have all of these things itemized out. And for those listening, you might think, oh, my goodness, is this going to take me forever to go through? The answer is no, it doesn't, but it does cause you to think.
Yeah.
And that is so frequently an investment that I don't know that we recognize is worth the time, because we live in a world that is so busy, 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 go, 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 go. And one of the things with the CD that you have with this book, that if people maybe instead of playing a video game would spend a half hour just doing something like this on the computer, it really is an asset. And if they can be quiet, if they can do it someplace where they're not going to be interrupted with kids running around, dogs barking, or what have you, it really can be very, very insightful.
Yeah. Once again, you've hit the absolute bullseye here. when it comes to visioning, we've gone from values, your path, mission statement is what you're currently doing, and vision statement, think what you'd like to do in the future. You're absolutely right. And visioning really has to be done alone. You can get some guidance and input from, you know, from a religious leader or something in your life, or the religious readings that you do, but you really need to do this all alone. And we do prompt you with a lot of questions, and there's a lot of white space on the worksheets. And actually, the new book that's come out, it comes out each year now, the 2008 edition, the first page is this blast. It says, don't get intimidated by the worksheets. Fill them in. Just as what you need, you can always revisit them. You can always add to that. You can always change things. You can say, well, I looked a little deeper into myself, and this is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But the beauty of the visioning is, and I break it down into three different pieces, and I'm as materialistic as anyone. You know, I got to drive a nice car and have a nice house and all that kind of stuff. But I ask the question about visioning is, what would you like to have, do, or be in the future? And I say be for the last. I think what you want to be and being is probably more important than having and doing. And I try to sneak, first I snuck up on you on values, and at the end of the visioning section, I try to sneak up on you once again and say, listen, look at some of the work by, like, Eric Fromm on to have or to be. And what is it that really excites you? Is it going to Walmart or going to, Bloomingdale's and buying something? Is it going to give you lasting value as opposed to looking inside yourself and who you are? And that's what's called the journey into the self. That's the book I'm working on literally as we speak. I get rescued off of Mount Washington almost dead. I've done Washington mountains all over the world and been very lucky because people around me have died and I haven't. And I almost died on Mount Washington, my own backyard, and got rescued, and as a result of which I give a series of seminars entitled Lessons for Living from Mount Washington Misadventure. And in that, I talk about admonitions, three things that I learned on that mountain. Number one is be prepared to die. Number two is have a plan to live, strategic plan. Number three, do it now, because you never know when number one's going to hit. And so I ask people in the Optimize Your Life book, I ask them to look, give me a 1 year, give me a 2 year, give me a 5 year, give me a 10 year, give me a plan. So I do a lot of work with older people because I'm approaching 70, and I've had a very full life. And each year, on my website, I do the 10 things I want to do before I die, which sounds kind of serious, but that's my visioning statement reduced to 10 things I want to do. Now, some of them are silly. I want to swim with snow monkeys in Japan. Well, it's illegal. Well, that shouldn't keep a guy like me. I've traveled all over the world. I've been to China. I've been to Russia. But I've never been on the Trans-Siberian Railroad. So, hello. It's like number three on my list.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, one of them is I want to be a best-selling book on the New York Times. And one of them is I want to get paid X number of dollars for a speaking engagement. So why not? Put those things in there. Now, if you're young, you can put in what you want to do in your lifetime and different segments, and if you're older, you say, what do you want to do in your lifetime? And that's fine. I probably, with the diseases I carry and what I know as a pathologist and an aggressive treatment, I probably have 5 good years left. And I want to take advantage of everything. But I become a Buddhist. Even I'm, I'm not sure how much religion you want. I happen to be a born-again Christian. I was a Jesus freak before I became popular. But in many ways, I'm a Buddhist. I live each day. I never know when you're going to die. I've been in the death and dying business since I was in medical school, and that's a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the Buddha has a neat thing about it's a little poem from when you're going to die, and it says, every day a birdie on my shoulder asks, is today the day? Are you doing everything you should be doing? Are you being everything you want to be? That's the question, and I like to be able to, at the end of any day, to be able to say, yes, today, Bernie, you did do the things that you wanted to do, and you are the person you want to be.
I want to address something that you brought up in looking at where you want to be in a certain period of time, because there was a very dear friend of mine who lives in Oregon, and she was successful in the jewelry business, and when her family decided to move to the state of Oregon, it ended up being an entirely different lifestyle. And she had totally stepped away from the commercial environment of life that she'd been involved with for 20-plus years. And when we had a chance to talk about this, she said her whole level of priorities had changed. She decided she was going to invest in her own wellness. She decided she was going to not be so concerned about doing certain things as she had done in the past. And there were many people around her, because she was so good at what she had done professionally, they wanted to see her go back into an environment that was going to enable her to use her skills
right.
in a way that was going to just continue to bring so much good into life. But that's not where her heart was. So by being able to go into this smaller community, she was able to get in touch with herself. She got physically fit. And she's really not gotten into the professional area like she was before, because her heart's not there. So she had to have an integrity with herself and make it okay to say to people, that's not really what I want. That's not where I am. That's not my value. So I wanted to share that with my audience and with you today, because I think, like you said, you can start out in a certain direction. And you may find, as one executive that I'm aware of found, that he had made, you know, $500,000 a year and all of that, but he was not where he wanted to be. And he goes on a camping trip with someone, and he finds that that's really where he wants to be, is in the outdoors, and he ends up becoming a tour guide. And
yeah.
anybody that hears about this transition with this man thinks he's nuts,
yeah.
but he's happy. And I think there is that sense of fulfillment. He's interacting with people. He's doing what he wants to do. And he said, if I want to go back to that environment, I can do that, but that's not where I want to be. So I use them as two examples for people, because it's important to know you can change your mind.
Yeah.
And you have to have integrity with yourself, because you may be recognized for wonderful abilities and talents, or you may be put down by someone. It's up to the individual to make their choice,
yeah.
to really take time to make that choice. And that's why I think your book is so valuable, because you can have that integrity with yourself, and sometimes it's scary for people.
Yeah. Well, Donna, you are one wonderful interviewer, because you've got so much material there. The only thing I wanted to add to run with that is that I think in the final analysis, I don't care what age you are, and the people I deal with in my world are the ones that are in their 20s, I'm telling them, you know, get a broad education, because you'll probably have three careers during your life.
Mm-hmm.
But those later on in life, I'm saying it's okay to leave. It's okay. I left the $350,000 to $500,000 a year job. I was the chief and all this and that great stuff. I left it. I left it nicely and things that I had worked on. Daltrey's Pathology Associates went on without my care, because it was designed well and shared well in synergy. But I went on to live my own life. In other words, you're never too old to run away with the circus. However, you got to remember you have responsibilities as individuals, responsibility to family, children, wives, and spouses, and stuff like that. So, you know, you have to watch out that you don't be completely selfish. That you can live a little bit of a Walter Mitty type life until you're ready to react. But I think, once you've put your act together, and you need to share this with the key people in your life, and if they don't like that for any number of reasons, that's too bad. There's an article I've written, and its title is, "Do not share your visions with others, for there are those without dreams that may destroy yours."
Napoleon Hill, the
yep.
great-great-granddaddy of all motivational people, in my book anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Went through
people...
the same thing. He
yeah.
went through the same thing. For 20 years, he did research on his masterpiece, The Law of Success.
Yeah.
And by golly, it was terrible. He
yeah.
just had an awful time, but he couldn't give it up. And then he ended up becoming very wealthy and being able to share the knowledge that took him 20 years of research to do.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. Yeah, there are those people that you can share your dreams with, who are going to want to see you successful. Those are the people that you want to talk to. But the biggest thing I found, Dr. Dahl, is the integrity with the self. And that is so hard, because the making of an individual is a journey that is not for the faint-hearted.
Yeah. Wow. You've got the buzzword. The number one word in the English language for me is the word integrity. It was Alan Simpson, the senator, I believe, from Montana or Wyoming, who said, integrity, without it, nothing else matters. Integrity, with it, nothing else matters. It's in my book. I finally credit him in the second edition where I found that. Integrity. The most important thing you have in relationship to others is integrity, to be honest, even if it's painful. And the next most important, actually probably the most important, is have integrity with yourself. Mm-hmm. As I write this, I've been struggling now for 8 or 9 years now since my Mount Washington rescue experience, the Mount Washington misadventure, I call it, is the journey into the self. It's a very painful one if you're really honest. It's like peeling the onion. That's a terrible metaphor. But I happen to be a member of the Joseph Campbell Foundation group, and I just came back like 10 days ago from Big Sur, California. And we gather every year on the birthday of for the whole week of Joseph Campbell, the mythology person. And we look at not only our own lives, but others' lives that we influence. And as a writer, and you're an author as well, I've seen your books, you'd be surprised where your books go and where people will email you, and they'll be very brief emails will come back and say, your book has changed my life. And all mm-hmm. of a sudden, I'm saying, wow, I've got to take this stuff seriously. So as I write this thing about journey into, I'm taking the journey into myself. And, you know, I had the privilege of going to, not only getting degrees and all along the way, and I went to summer school. You know, I was a classic student. I was not a nerd completely. I did a lot of sports as well. But the thing is that I've had that luxury of taking all those courses from the teaching company. I'm in Australia, and I'm taking the GAN train from wherever to Adelaide, and I'm plugged in at 2 o'clock in the morning to Aristotle or Plato or Nietzsche sort of came in at that point. So we can learn, we can grow, and we can do these things, and we can look inside ourselves. Not everybody wants to do that. And the thing is, it takes courage to go inside.
Mm-hmm.
It takes courage to take charge of your life. Not everybody can run away with a circus. But the ones that want to, there's a lot of stuff out there that can help them. They are traveling alone. This is a solo trip. When you go looking for the Holy Grail, you know, you're going alone. And it's not the path. You're not going down a path that someone else has done. You're bushwhacking. You're going through stuff, uncharted territory. It's unknown. And you mm-hmm. are everything. And the thing to me is the people that I've surrounded myself in the state of Maine, it's got a lot of interesting people that have come up here. And just like Oregon has, just like Washington State has, and Colorado is sort of my second favorite state. A lot of people up there that I meet and I hike with that have taken that trip. And so, and it's a joy. It's also scary. You have to be loaded to the gills to be able to take that trip. And you do it piece by piece, step by step, and you learn something every year. And then you share that. But you got to be careful when you start sharing with other people. They may not be ready for that information. So in this book, we try, in Optimize Your Life, we try to be friendly. Don't fill out every page. Come back later. Do the light version. Just go through. Oh, by the way, you can just look at the toxic things in it. Well, how do you define toxic? Well, you're going to define toxic. What are the things that is killing your spirit right now? Try to do what you can to get rid of it in a responsible way. What are the opportunities in your life that are showing up that you might not have those opportunities a year or 2 or 3 years now? You may have to make an adult, tough decision, a go or no go. There's no halfway thing here. So we try to help you in that. So you can take a book like Optimize Your Life. You can go through it seriously, step by step, have a lot of fun, put it on your computer, or you can just go highlights, boom, 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 through it. Look for toxic things. Look for opportunity things. Or look for something specific you want to work on right now. That's the beauty of the book. It is a lot of left brain stuff. It's a lot of linear logic stuff. And I hope it doesn't read like an autopsy report or a biopsy report, because after all, I am a pathologist. I'm dealing with nonfiction. So that's my apologia.
Well, Dr. Dahl, it has been wonderful. For those of you listening, this is Dr. Bernie Dahl, D-A-H-L is the spelling of his name. What is your website? Because we're almost out of time.
Yeah, it's the best one that has everything is Trionics. That's T-R-I-O-N-I-C-S, Trionics USA, because we're worldwide, TrionicsUSA.com. But write to me at D-R for Dr., B for Bernie, D-A-H-L at AOL.com. Tell me where you heard from me and what I can do for you, and I answer all the emails. We have a good staff, and we have a lot of sense of humor here. It's drbdahl@aol.com, and the book is called Optimize Your Life, and it's out there in all kinds of editions.
Yes, and you have other books as well, so be sure to go to his website,
yep.
Trionics, USA.com. That's T-R-I-O-N-I-C-S, USA.com, or D-R-B-D-A-H-L at AOL.com. Dr. Bernie, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Donna, you are marvelous.
Well, thank you very much. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyND.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on BBSRadio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and guess what? Telephone lines are open. Yes, indeedy. So if you want to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I will be delighted to do exactly that. Now, here are the telephone numbers to call in to, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also, 888-815-9756. That's for Canadians, 888-815-9756. And 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Now, remember, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. So again, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, or 530-876-3222. Those phone lines are now open. By the way, we have got a great lineup of guests that are going to be coming on with us next week. We're going to be talking about college, parents, relationships with their kids. Winston Churchill, isn't that a name to be given to a kid? Well, we've got him coming on Monday, and we're going to be talking all about his wonderful book. And if nobody loves you, hey, create the demand. Yes, Joel Freeman is going to give us insights into that. We're going to be talking about transformers, shamans of the 21st century, fascinating material. And then a woman's book of spirit with Sue Catron-Toll. We're going to be talking with her, and then Dr. Petty, one of my favorite people. We're going to be talking about healing, meaning, and purpose. This is a doctor that travels all over the world and is involved with research and development in the area of medicine and the areas of mind and so many different levels, and he has worked with us for so many years of his life, and it's just wonderful to have him on the air to be able to share that. So we've got a great lineup of people. You're not going to want to miss any of it. So make a note, and remember, too, we have the archives. So if you miss a show, goodness, I know you're busy people. If you miss a show, you can always go in and listen to the archives at your leisure. Of course, when we're on live, that's when you can call in and chat if that's what you'd like to do. Don't forget, you can call me at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. I want to thank those of you who are sending me information. I get so many emails, and sometimes I'm not able to use the material, other times I am. And this is something that came through to me, and I opened it up today. It's called Warnings and Alerts. It was sent by a man named Bob, and it's about low-tech schemes creating high-tech risk. And this is what the information was that I was sent, and I thought I would share it with you today because obviously all of you that are listening to the show own computers. This is what the article said. Did you know the security of your computer could be at risk even when it's not turned on? One method of gaining unauthorized access to your computer is to simply ask you directly. Did you know the security of your computer could be at risk even when it's not turned on? Yep, there we go. This technique is known as social engineering. Brand new verbalization of something that's quite old. While it may sound like only a fool would fall for such a trick, you'd be amazed at how often people will hand over vital data from an address book to bank account details to someone just because they appear to know what they are talking about. A typical social engineering attack is as simple as the perpetrator contacting you by phone or email and pretending to be someone who you would trust with sensitive information, such as someone from your company's IT department or your bank. Fortunately, the solution is equally as simple. You just need to think carefully before handing over any information. Passwords, never share them. If you share your password with even one other person, whatever is being protected by that password is instantly less secure. A thief now has two people he can attempt to trick into releasing the information. If you are asked for this type of information, it should immediately raise a red flag. Try to verify that the person you are dealing with is legitimate. Ask their name and organization, write it down, and also ask if you can call them back. If they refuse to give a phone number or make excuses why you can't call them back, it's a good indication that something isn't the way it's supposed to be. Also, keep all of your notes. Send yourself an email with all the details on the day the call was made. If the incident occurs at your workplace, copy your security or human resources department. When you have detailed notes, you'll have more information to provide to the authorities if someone does try to access your account. And the more information you can give them, the better the chance that the thief will be caught. There was a gentleman I was reading information about today. He was in a critical care situation in a hospital. And while he was in the hospital, literally on death's bed, he was astonished to be getting calls from creditors. There was a member of staff at the hospital, they found this out later, that had gotten access to his files and, presuming that he was going to die, started using the credit card. Now, the person was apprehended. They did a trace. They finally found out who it was. But this individual had used this person's credit line to well over $100,000. Now, everything eventually was cleared up in his credit, and he is still alive today. But this was a major, major thing that went on. affecting his care and well-being and people all around him. It was just an incredible experience. So identity theft is something we do have to pay attention to. We live in a very sophisticated world, and information flies just like you wouldn't believe all around us. So just as we used to have to be very concerned and still should be with our checks and our checkbooks and that type of thing, you need to be aware that there are those people that are extremely sophisticated and never, ever give out Social Security numbers or any other kind of information without asking if you can call them back. And if they're not willing to do that, then you have got something you need to be very, very suspicious of, because they are out there and they are a dime a dozen in many ways. It's amazing how this goes on. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Also, I was going to share with you, if I had some time today, some information on how one woman is dealing with terrorism. Yes, I loved her story, and I'll be sharing it with you. But this one that came through really touched my heart. It's called the Daffodil Principle. And the reason it means a lot to me is here in the state of Washington, we have daffodil parades, and we just absolutely love our flowers. And, of course, the daffodils everywhere. You will just see this beautiful, beautiful golden color in there, and there's wonderful clusters that people have in their gardens. And the tulips are coming out now, and so they're all different colors. But it's just so invigorating in the spring when you have it. So I thought I'd share this daffodil principle with you that was sent to me. And this woman said her daughter had telephoned her many, many times saying, "Mom, you've got to come and see the daffodils before they're all gone." And she said, "I really didn't want to do it. There was always something going on. I'd say, oh, dear, I'd love to do this." She said, "But it's a two-hour drive from Laguna to Lake Arrowhead, and it's going to take a whole day, and I just don't have free time right now." Well, finally, she said, okay, and her daughter kept calling her on. She called her every day. She said, "Mom, you got to see this." Well, finally she said, "Okay, I'll come up on Tuesday." And just really, when Tuesday came around, it was cold, it was rainy, but being a mom, she had given her word, and so she drove the length, she said, of Route 91, continued on I-215, and finally turned onto Route 18 and began to drive up a mountain highway. Now, the mountains were covered in clouds, and she found that fog was coming in really thickly. In California, I've experienced that many, many times. So she was driving, and she was just slowly going, you know, just down to a crawl. And she said, "This was not fun. I was driving up this mountainous path. I couldn't see." And finally, we came to a turnoff at what was called Blue Jay and went into my daughter's house. His name is Carolyn, and she saw her grandchildren. She said, "That's enough, Carolyn. Not going to go anywhere. It's fog, all this kind of stuff." And her daughter just looked at her mother and said, "Okay, we drive in this all the time, Mom. Don't worry about it." Well, she said, I'm not going to go. Carolyn, I'm just not going to go on this trip. I am not going to do it because I will not be out driving in this weather." And she said, "Well, you know what, Mom? Why don't you just take me over to the garage, because I've got to pick up my car." So guess what Mom said? "Well, how far is that?" Being very cautious, "No, just a little distance," her daughter said. So her daughter then said to her, "Mom, since you're all so apprehensive, I'll drive." And that's what started the whole journey. And Mom said, "Well, I was aware we're back on the rim of the world road heading over the top of the mountain." And she said, "I started getting very upset with my daughter. Where are we going?" "Well, we're going to go to the garage my way, Mom, by the way of the daffodils." Carolyn was winning this battle. Well, her mother tried to be very stern about the whole thing. And she said, "I want you to turn around, Carolyn. There's nothing in this world I want to see enough to drive on this road in this weather." Have you ever had someone, a mature person, say this to you? Well, she said, "Don't worry, Mom. I know what I'm doing. I promise you'll never forgive yourself if you miss this experience." So she said, "Here's my wonderful daughter driving. She's never, ever given me difficulty in her entire life. We're heading over this mountain, thick gray fog, wrapping the mountain can't see your hand in front of your face. Grandkids are in the back seat. I'm sweating bullets. We're going to take a break for just a moment, and I'll tell you the rest of this story when we come back. Really cool. Don't go away. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be right back.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717.
Hi, this is Donna. I'm going to finish the rest of the Daffodil Principle. Remember, Mom? Well, her name is Geraldine. Yes, her daughter Carolyn is driving through this mountainous area, and Geraldine is just not too excited about the whole experience. She's very concerned about safety, but Carolyn, her daughter, isn't too concerned. She knows where she's going. Well, they're over this mountain. They end up parking in a small parking lot adjoining a little stone church. And when they got out of the car, they saw a sign saying Daffodil Garden. Well, Geraldine wasn't really too excited about this, but she was following her daughter and her grandchildren. She had them in by the hand. And she followed her daughter down a path that wound around some trees. The path was sort of irregular. And, of course, she's sort of mumbling and grumbling. She's been doing a pretty good job of this, Geraldine has, during the entire journey. And she said, live oaks, mountain laurel, shrubs, and bushes clustered in the folds and in the gray, drizzling air. The green foliage looked dark and monochromatic, and I was shivering. I was so cold. And then they turned a corner on the path, and she looked up, and she just gasped out loud. She said, I saw before me the most magnificent sight. It was unexpected and totally, totally splendid. It looked as if someone had taken a great vat of gold and poured it down over the mountain peak and slopes, where it had run into every crevice and over every rise. Even in the misty air, the mountainside was gloriously radiant, clothed in massive drifts and waterfalls of daffodils. The flowers were planted in majestic swirling patterns, great ribbons and swaths of deep orange, white, lemon yellow, salmon pink, saffron, and butter yellow. She learned later that there were more than 35 varieties of daffodils in this phenomenal display, and they were planted as a group so that it swirled and flowed like its own river with its own unique hue. Now, she said, in the center of this incredible and dazzling display of gold, a great cascade of purple grape hyacinth flowed down like a waterfall of blossoms framed in its own rock-lined basin, weaving through all of these gloriously brilliant daffodils. And she said there was also a path that wound throughout this entire garden. There were lots of resting stations, and they were paved with stone and furnished with Victorian-style wooden benches and tubs of coral and Carmen tulips. Now, she said, this you would think was magnificent enough, but Mother Nature had added her own grace note, and above the daffodils there was a bevy of western bluebirds that were flitting and darkening among the flowers, and their blue was a beautiful contrast to what was there. And she said, these little birds that I was looking at were the color of sapphires, and they had breasts of magenta red. They danced in the air, and their colors were like jewels above the glowing daffodils. She could not believe what she was experiencing. She realized then it didn't make any difference that the sun wasn't shining. The daffodils, their brilliant color was like the glow of the brightest sunlit day. She said, I've tried to, but it's hard for me to describe the incredible beauty of this flower-decked mountaintop. She discovered later that there were 5 acres of flowers, and her daughter, she was very grateful that her daughter hadn't listened to her. She said, who did this? When, why? She had all these questions, and her daughter said, it was one woman. She lives on the property, and I'll show you her home. And she showed her a well-kept A-frame house, and there was a big poster that had been put outside the house. It had on it answers to the questions I know you were asking. The first answer was a simple one, 50,000 bulbs, it read. The second answer was, one at a time, by one woman, 2 hands, 2 feet, and very little brain. The third answer was, began in 1958. And Jolene said that was the whole thing, the daffodil principle. She said, this woman, who I never met, who more than 35 years before my experience of being in this beautiful place had begun one bulb at a time to bring her vision of beauty and joy to an obscure mountaintop. One bulb at a time. No shortcuts. She did this planting because she loved it. She loved the work as she was doing it. One bulb at a time, year by year, had changed the world she had lived in. And this unknown woman had forever changed the world that was going to be experiencing this beautiful piece, this beautiful masterpiece of flowers that she had done. She said this principle of her daffodil garden taught me one of the greatest ways to celebrate. Learning to move towards our goals and desires one step at a time, often just one baby step at a time, learning to love the doing, learning to use the accumulation of time. And when we do that, we can accomplish magnificent things. We can change the world. Well, you can imagine how grateful she was to her daughter. She said, this is amazing to me. And she said, it sort of makes me sad, Carolyn, what I might have accomplished if I'd thought of a wonderful goal 35 years ago and worked away at it one bulb at a time like this unknown woman did. Just think of what I might have been able to achieve. Her daughter, as they were getting in the car, and as she was starting up the engine, said, Mom, you can start tomorrow. I think it fits very nicely with what we were talking about with Dr. Bernie Dahl. This is your day. Whether you plant daffodil bulbs, whether you have a dream that you have yearned for and you just don't know how to go about making it happen because it may seem too big for you, keep the daffodil story in your mind, won't you? One day at a time, one motion at a time. So often we think we've got to have everything instantaneously. This story by Jolene Edwards, I was so privileged to receive it because her story is a poignant one. It is something that makes us realize that the artistry in life comes from the joy in doing and the standard of excellence that we set for ourselves and just doing what we can when we can and never giving up. What's in our hearts, what's in our minds, because one person does make a difference. And you are that one person. It's been absolutely delightful sharing this time with you. My thanks to Dr. Bernie Dahl. join me. We've got a dynamic week next week, and it's going to be a pleasure to share it with you, as it always is. Remember, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Have a fabulous weekend. Tap dance as if you never knew you could not do it. Go for it. This is Donna Sebo. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Niles McClower for the new show, Why Life Is, right here on Friday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Now on BBS Radio, Why Life Is answers a vast number of questions and explores the demystifying of metaphysics and spirituality. Just a fraction of what we will cover are such subjects as detailed explanations of the afterlife, what the meaning of life is, and what intelligent life is like in other worlds. This is a show many of you have been waiting for to hear and participate in as well. Why Life Is has been on the air broadcasting for nearly 3 years and is now available on BBS Radio in prime time on Friday nights at 7 p.m.
Hello, my name is Ian, and I want to invite you to visit Ian's Place every Sunday at 4 p.m. At Ian's Place, we have the most powerful conversations on talk radio. If you want to start living your life your way, then Ian's Place is the place for you. We're going to cut to the chase and have a lot of fun doing it. So grab a cup of coffee, get comfortable, and tune into Ian's Place and discover simple techniques that gives you the ability to customize your life your way. That's Ian's Place at bbsradio.com, station number 2, every Sunday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Our time.